Welcome to Players World Kitchen Podcast, made in Wrexham and brought to you by Oscar Mayer, the Rugby Players Association and Brand Me. My name is Judith Batchelor and today I have the honour and privilege of talking with Women's rugby legend Shauna Brown about her journey and the challenges for women in the game of rugby and empowerment, feelings of self-worth, diversity, inclusion, and lots more. So without further ado, let's start. But before we do that, for those of you who don't know Shauna, just a little bit about this remarkable woman. Before rugby, Shauna had a career in athletics, representing England in the hammer throw at the 2014 Commonwealth Games. She began playing rugby at age 25, making her international debut 2 years later after getting permission from her employers at Kent Fire and Rescue. She went on to be a mainstay for the Red Roses, earning 30 caps. Shauna played for Harlequins in Premiership Women's Rugby and retired at the end of the 23-24 season. She recently became a host for The Love of Rugby with Sadia Kabea and Maud Muir. Welcome, Shauna.
Thank you for having me. It's quite the intro.
Well, you're quite the woman.
I always like to pick out what's wrong and what's right, but it's actually all correct. So you're starting well, Judith.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being here. And we always start with the similar question. How on earth did you get into rugby relatively late compared to many?
So 25 when I started. I had my first taster session when I was in my A-level PE class at sixth form. And there was only sort of six or eight of us in that class. And there was a rugby coach who essentially just said, you can hit the boys. And I look back now, I think I'm not sure that was allowed. Boys and girls mixed at age 16, 18. But
hey.
Here I am now. But he kept encouraging me to hit harder and be stronger, be more aggressive and take them to the ground. And I was like, what? There's this man telling me I can hit things harder. And usually, and in society, look back now, as a girl and as so many girls in this world and in our culture, you're just constantly told to be quiet, sit in the corner, play nicely, go and be pretty. Oh, aren't you beautiful? Oh, what a lovely name. Like, nobody's saying, oh, you're so brave and strong, Shauna. Except my mum, of course. My mum is my super fan the whole way through. So all of a sudden, I've got this man who doesn't know me from anywhere, but he's reaching my inner soul, telling me to just be bigger, be bolder, be stronger. And I thought, oh, blimey, is this rugby? And we was essentially just wrestling and fighting for a half an hour taster session. And it just sat with me. I couldn't do anything about it at the time in terms of playing rugby because I was in athletics at an international level. And as you said, eventually went to Commonwealth Games in 2014. But it stayed in my mind, at the back of my mind. And then come 2015, when I'd retired from athletics, I thought, oh, I remember that rugby thing, that big fight. The guy said I could just fight for 2 hours. I thought, let's give that a go. And then went to my local rugby club at Medway Rugby Club. And as they say, the rest is history.
Wow. But you clearly sort of hit the ground running, as it were. I mean, at what point did you think, gosh, I really like this game, and B, I'm quite good at it, and I could perhaps make a career of it?
Make a career of it was never there, because as a female in sport, it was never an option. I always, even though I went to Commonwealth Games, went to a World Championships, European Championships, Commonwealth Youth Games, none of that ever paid the bills. So for it to be a paying career, like, at no point did it cross my mind that that's what it would ever be. In terms of being good at it, I remember one of my first coaches at Medway, he introduced me to a new group of players after I'd done one session. And he went, this is Shauna. She can catch, she can run, and she can throw. She's good. And I thought, oh, well, if he said, I've done one session with him. I said, if he says I'm good, I must be all right.
Oh, yeah.
But again, it was that physicality of rugby and the just hitting people. I just really
loved it.
Really enjoyed running through three or four people, and like the handoffs, and it sometimes gets quite rugby specific, but just being encouraged to run through three or four people. I was just like, yeah. And I'm really good at it. I really enjoy it. And then I went to watch a Women's Six Nations game. It was England v Wales at the Twickenham Stoop one day. And I just sat there watching, as you do. And I thought, I've sat with my mum. I nudged her. I went, I reckon I could do that. She went, do what now? Because mum's used to me doing so many different things. Do what now? Yeah, yeah. Well, play rugby for England. I reckon I could rock on that pitch right now. No one would know. I don't really have a clue what's going on because I could just run into people. She went, all right, go and do it then. Because again, mum's used to me not only saying I'll do things, but actually going and doing it. And so, yeah, that was my encouragement from mum. She's like, all right, just go and do it then. And so I did. And a few months later, I was in an England camp.
That is amazing. Yeah, that is an amazing story. How much do you think your achievement, and particularly that, which is a very fast ascendancy in the sport, was because people gave you confidence? Or do you think that confidence came from within?
I believe confidence will always come from somebody else at first, because as youngsters, girls and boys, we're basically just shut down with our confidence. And particularly for girls, that you go out and do something, you're told, well, it wasn't perfect. Why did you do that in the first place? And if it's not going to be the 100% finished product, don't even bother. So we're constantly shut down as children and our confidence is taken away from us. So therefore, it has to be built back up by other people, is how I see it. And I had so many adults around me protecting me from this horrible world where as a girl, a very comfortable straight female growing up, who would often be called a she-man, a he-she, a she-hulk. People would ask if I was a boy or a girl, like kids at school. You know, kids at school are just awful generally, and they would tell me that I was gay and that I liked girls, and they would say, you want to be a boy. But it's because of how I dressed, which was always in a tracksuit and trainers, how I had my hair, which was in plaits, because mum just didn't want the ag of doing my hair every day. And because I love sport. So I grew up with that from children and some adults, to be fair, but I had more adults around me telling me that it's okay. Like my mum, I'd go home and ask mum, why are these people telling me that I want to be a boy? Like, I don't even know what that means to be a boy. I'm a girl. And like, I would happily, and even now, accept the term tomboy. Like, I would describe myself as a tomboy. And all she would say is, they're just jealous. It's because you're better at football than them. It's because you're smarter than them. It's because you're faster than them. It's because you're better looking than them. Whatever it was all because you're jealous. They're jealous. And so truly, like, that's what I grew up thinking. Oh, like, if someone doesn't like me now, I just think, oh, you're more or not me. Which, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Well, mums are good at that, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
are exactly. Good at that. And she protected me. My school teachers protected me. In terms of sport and PE, and I went to quite a small school, and so if a few of the girls didn't do PE, like, I couldn't really do PE, and I'd always join the boys. And I used to play football growing up, and I recently found out, but my PE teacher used to have to write off to the opposition school every time I played to ask if permission for a girl to play. And it was always a yes the first time round. I would go and I'd play and I'm good at football. And then the next time we'd play at school, he'd write again and they'd say, oh no, we don't think it's right. But it's because I was one of the best players on the team. And so they're just taking away one of the better players. But that I didn't know that growing up. I just thought I wasn't playing because I had to go to class or whatever it was. So yeah, I had a lot of great adults around me protecting me, but also building me up and encouraging me to do more and more and want to be better.
And that's what we all need. And those champions, supporters, mentors, coaches, whatever you want to call them, you know, they're important throughout our whole lives, actually, because you still need those even when you, you know, enter adulthood and second and third careers. Everyone needs a champion, don't they?
Yeah, I think we get to a place in life where we think, oh, I'm an adult now, like, I can just do my own thing, and if I'm no good at it. But we all know that friend in our life who just hypes us up for everything. We all know that friend who makes you feel invincible. Like, that's the same thing. We need it as adults. We need people to push us. The amount of times someone says to me, oh, I don't do sport, I don't do exercise. I went, how did you get up those stairs? Did you walk up those stairs? Yeah, well, that's exercise. Like, you walked to the toilet. Yeah, that's exercise. And just challenging people. And when they say, I don't do this, I'm not very good at that, I'm like, have you tried it? No. So yeah, we certainly need it. Probably even more as adults, because we don't have the sort of the vulnerability and the innocentness of being a child.
Yeah. Just thinking about those people that have given you confidence, that have been your sort of protectors, supporters, champions. Have they been other women, or have they been a mixture of men and women?
A mixture of men and women. I'd say growing up, mainly men. It was mum, and then mainly men, because that says my PE teacher. To be fair, my head of PE was female, but just because she was head, I just didn't have as much interaction with her. And then my athletics coach, John Hillier, he was my father figure.
Yeah.
I saw him more like, I didn't really have my dad around growing up that much. And so he was the man who I would argue with. I didn't go to university. He was like, that's the worst decision I've ever made. And I had a full blown argument with him about why I'm not going to go. Like, the kind of conversations and arguments you'd have with your dad, I had that with John. So I'd say, yeah, it's more of a mixture of men and women, but more men because of the environments I was operating in, i.e. sport and like the big practical things that more men do in life. And it's only as I've got older, I've surrounded myself with more women. And at first it wasn't a conscious decision. It was just, I used to say, and I hate myself, I'm like, oh, I get on better with men. Like, I used to say that and I'm like, ugh, I used to say that. But it's just because I wasn't around as many women and not as, the powerful women, the strong women that I know and I'm around now. So a mixture, but predominantly men growing up and now a lot more women. But, just at that age, you just need people to tell you that you are good enough, you can do more, you can do better.
Well, people that have your best interests at heart and care enough about you to tell you the good stuff as well as the bad stuff and the bad stuff as well as the good stuff so that, you've got that balance. But finding those people is easier said than done.
Yeah, exactly.
But moving on to here, we're sitting in Wrexham. Tomorrow is a big day because we're, starting to film the Players World Kitchen and you're going to be leading that. That's slightly different from playing rugby. How are you feeling about all of that?
Excited. There is a bit of, I would say, nerves. Like, it's the scripted bit for me, so I am very good at talking. I can go on for hours about a particular subject, like literally any given subject. I could waffle on about it. But for it to be scripted and to know that there's particular outcomes that the director...
To stick to time.
Sticking to time as well is another one. So yeah, my biggest aim is to bring out the best version of the players when they're cooking and do equal amounts of winding them up and making sure that they don't stick to time. Like, while I'm sticking to time, I'm like, oh, you got to hurry up, girls, the time's clock's ticking. I'm looking forward to, even for my own personal development, because I'd say I do lots of speaking, public speaking, but rarely am I given a script to say. And again, speaking in front of cameras, but I get a break every 30 seconds to have a quick look back at the script if it is something scripted or even maybe an auto cue. So yeah, there's going to be certainly a plenty of personal learning for me, and for it to be 6 episodes, it's like, wow.
Yeah,
I actually feel sorry for the first episode person. It might not be as good, but the person in the 6th episode will smash it.
Well, we've got the power of editing. That's the key. But, just today and all the girls coming together, it's been very noisy here. So there's lots of energy. It seems like you're a great group of women, known each other a long time. There's a really good vibe about the place.
They
seem to have gelled very quickly.
Yeah, well, they'll just know each other anyway. It's rugby, it's relatively a small world. And like, I've not actually spent that much time with Karis Cox and Emma Wassell before, but like, we're all rugby players and you just instantly do know each other because we know what we've gone through, the good, the bad, the ugly, and some of the conversations we're having, like, oh, this happens at our club, on this, what happens at your country, what happens at your camps, and then you can go back and forth. But I'm used to that type of person and that group, and when I'm not around that type of energy, I struggle personally. And even things like, once upon a time I tried to, well, I got an office job and I thought, I had to try it, didn't I? it's not for me, and the energy in the room, it's not for me. Everyone's very serious, shall we say. I'm trying to like throw pens and pencils at people and they're not throwing them back. I'm like, what's wrong with
this environment?
Not interested. So yeah, high energy group, and I think that says more about them and the type of people who play rugby. And actually, if you think you're not that type of person, you'll play rugby and it will bring out your true self, and I'm more happy the fact that they can be who they are in rugby. And there are some quieter people, there are some even louder people, but whoever you are, like, we need you in rugby, and that's the special thing about the sport.
And the hope with all of this and bringing this group together and creating these programs and being in the kitchen is we do bring the sport to a broader audience, and particularly the women's game, actually, to a broader audience, because it is a very different game to the game that's played by men.
Yeah, it's a different product.
Say a better game than
but
some.
I would just say different because yeah. It's kind of not a competition because we're so different as a product. Like you can enjoy both. And when we're getting fans to watch women's games, we're not just trying to get men's fans to convert. We want new people. And so it depends what style of rugby you want to watch. If you want to watch a more expansive game and there's a bit more running around and a bit less kicking, then the women's game is for you. If you like just big, heavy people running into big, heavy people and lots of kicking, then maybe the men's game is for you. But they're different products. And that's, I think for me, that's okay to say it out loud. I think so often we pretend and we get treated as small men in terms of anything from training programs to nutrition guides to kicking. It's we're just small men, but we're not. Like, we're women, we are very different all round. I mean, ultimately we are humans, and that's a big part that, you know, this series for me I hope will bring out. And actually I think you'll be surprised how many of the girls don't really cook for themselves.
Yeah. Oh well, I think we're going to see that all tomorrow, aren't we?
Yeah, they'll get found out, and some people's dishes they've never even cooked it before, but they said it sounds lovely and they'd eat it. So it's just appreciating. The whole effort of being a rugby player, even as an individual, it takes a team, and they have to have someone who's going to cook for them,
yeah,
or someone who's going to pre-cook it for them, and then they put it in the oven to warm it up. But yeah, I'll be sure to bring out the best of them and the most entertaining sides of them.
Yeah. I've, as I say, the vibe is already a pretty good vibe here. So I suspect there'll be lots of energy on the set tomorrow for sure. Just a sort of question. We've obviously talked about rugby. We've talked about how you've come to be here in the kitchen. Other aspects of your personal development and your journey, you talked about obviously the podcast, you talk about some of the public speaking that you do. You know, how is all of that developing, and how did all of that kick off?
I am honestly just making it up as I go along. And even now people will say, oh, like, what do you do for a living? I go, oh, how long have you got? I do anything someone pays me to do. But it's like I say, event host, presenter, public speaker. I do a bit of sort of guest coaching here and there, ambassador work, and just talk about how great the game of rugby is, but also how great it can be. Speak to media, do podcasting. So there's just so many different strings to my bow. And so I've had quite a few people saying, oh, like, I need to niche, I need to do just one or two. And then I think about it for a while and I'm like, but I can't. And I don't want to. Mm. And then I'll speak to someone else. I'm like, no, you can be a specialist at everything. Or like, you can be a specialist at being a generalist. And I was like, yeah, I like that. Because I like doing random things. I like being asked to go and participate in a Sale GP physical competition trade-off between rugby players and sailors. Like, I like being asked to do a podcast and maybe to go and host an event that's nothing to do with sport. Like, I like the challenge of that.
Yeah.
So right now I'm just saying yes to as many things as possible. And even like people say, oh, what's the dream? And I say, honestly, I think I'm living it. It's just doing this. If I can make a living out of doing this and having this variety and having my own freedom and being my own boss and saying yes and no when I want to, like, I think that's the dream. But like, I'm not going to hold myself to that or hold myself back for that. If something else comes along and I'm interested more in that, then hey, I'll take that. But yeah, I'm quite happy just making it up as I go along at the moment.
But you say that, but there is something about you. You're a curious person, so yeah. You're always asking lots of questions. You're just inquisitive.
Yeah.
So you will say yes to everything because you're curious about where it might lead.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, actually, because it makes you an interesting person and it makes you able to talk to lots of people about lots of different things.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Sure. Yeah,
I'm getting in there. I know some people have a problem with saying yes and having a year of yes. I need to learn to say no.
But you don't know what you might miss.
No, exactly. And it's not like I have FOMO, a fear of missing out. It's more of a fear of, oh, like, who could I meet at that event? Who could I link up with? Who could I know that somebody else will know and then somebody else will know? And what could that lead to? And then I like to challenge myself to make, you know, a certain amount of connections at an event and then try and stay in touch with people. But yeah, it's like, well, you never know. But equally, like, I've been to plenty of events where I'm like, oh, that was a waste of my time. I could have stayed at home or been on certain phone calls. Been on certain phone calls. But hey, it's done now. I've had that conversation. I've been in that event. But when I go to events that are really good and really useful and met some amazing people, I'm like, oh, that's why I say yes to as much as possible for now.
One of the things that I suppose links on from that really is this idea of self-empowerment, you know, the fact that a lot of the energy and the things that you bring to whatever you do, the workplace, let's call it, in your unusual workplace. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about your approach to self-empowerment.
As I said, like growing up, mum would tell me that if someone didn't like me, it was their problem. And so I'm pretty similar to that now in my mindset. And I just think, what's the worst that could happen? Give something a go. And if you don't like it, then you know. Try and talk to someone. If somebody, like, I'm quite a good people reader, and even if it's youngsters, I had an event on a weekend, and a youngster, it was at Twickenham Allianz Stadium. She didn't want to be there. She said, I don't like rugby. I said, right, we've got to run out of this tunnel. This is a really special tunnel that international players have run out forever and a day, and they're going to continue. She's like, well, I don't like rugby. And she says, I don't do running. I thought, right, challenge accepted. And by the end of the day, I had her mum coming up to me. She's got a question to ask you. I said, oh, it's actually, she wants to know where her closest rugby club is.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, that is a win. But even when people are just like, boring, I challenge her. I'm like, you're not boring in your heart. I can see something in there. So a personal challenge to get them to even smile. That's how I keep my competitive streak going, because I just have my own things in my head that I try and get other people to do. But even in terms of people, like, where'd you get your confidence from? Like, it's not like it doesn't live with me. I have to practice it. And I truly believe about practicing confidence, and other people help you with that confidence. And as much as people will give me compliments when I do well, I also try and do the same thing. And I remember the first feeling of that is when I was at primary school. We was on a school trip, and, you know, it's 30 of us getting on a tube, and it's always chaos and it's always noisy. Mm. But I remember the following day we had an email read out to us that a member of public on the train had emailed in to say how well behaved we were and what a compliment we were to the school. And I remember how good that made me feel.
Yeah.
And so now I make an active effort, even like reviews online and bits. If it's so easy to complain when things are bad, and you're only really going to get in touch when things are not right.
Yeah.
But actually, to do the opposite, if something blows my socks away because it's so good, I like to make that effort to compliment the person, the company. If it's a school, I'll find out what school they are and I'll email in. And even if they're not that great, I just feel like some people moan too much. I'd like to be the positive light there. But yeah, it's that I ooze confidence, but I've learned to do that. But also I like to give confidence to other people, which then helps me. Mm. Like, some of it's almost selfish, because if I'm positive towards others, that helps me personally as well.
Well, they say in life, 80% of what you get is a function of what you dish out. So, yeah, you do get it back.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you say that one of the books that I read donkeys years ago, and it's a sort of international bestseller in terms of business books, mm. is called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, yeah. Stephen Covey.
Yeah.
And one of the habits is catching people doing it right. Mm-hmm. And that is so much more motivational than catching people doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And I love that phrase, because it absolutely, if you can look in any situation and find somebody doing it right, then you give them a real gift.
Yeah, yeah, and particularly when they're doing it right just because it's the right thing to do, not because there's a camera, not because there's a teacher or an adult watching. And that's the big thing I do when I'm coaching. There's so many roles on the rugby pitch that aren't the stardust ones, and it's not carrying the ball into contact, it's not scoring a massive try. Actually, it's you hitting that ruck, that last phase, because you hit that and you cleared out in the right way. Like, it gets a bit rugby boring. Yeah, but because of what you did, that then had this effect, and then our superstar fullback winger could score that try. But actually, that comes from you doing that thing that nobody really notices, because you know that was the right thing to do at that point. And even things like just picking up litter and seeing people who pick up rubbish, and like, it's not patronising. I won't go to an adult and say, well done for picking up. But a youngster, they just pick up a bit litter on the way. I go, I saw that, like, good on you. And they go, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, they would if it was you saying that. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. And just linked to that, this whole idea of worth and knowing your worth. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I now, because I am selling myself as the product, essentially, so I have to literally put a figure on my head and on my services. And at first I would, as like so many women in this world, undervalue myself. And then it got to a point where I was just getting annoyed with people's responses, especially when they wanted my services for free. And I would put like, I'd put a figure that was a lot higher than I thought I was even worth. And people would come back, go, yep, okay, we'll book you. And I'd go, what? God.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a bit of a game for me. I'm like, how much could I get out? And now, I mean, there's a bit more method to the madness I've been doing it for so long. But yeah, it was those early days when I literally remember an email coming back saying, oh, I didn't realise I'd have to pay. Like I'm going, they want me to go somewhere, a school that I'm not connected with and do activities, like, you know, do work. And I was like, right, that's really annoyed me. I'm going to triple my fee. And the school said yes to it and then asked me back to go for it like in the summer term as well. And I thought, blimey. So yeah, it's been a journey, as they say, and I'm in a good place with it now. But I still feel so strongly about other people realising, and particularly female rugby players who, you know, don't get paid an awful lot. Even some of them will still have to have jobs alongside being paid to play rugby if they're being paid to play rugby.
Yeah.
But like being, even like I say, even just, but you know, Premiership rugby player, if you're not international, but just Premiership, like that's still valuable. That still makes you a very special person and very unique in terms of the amount of Premiership rugby players that there are in this world. And so, yeah, getting them to realise that if a school asks you to come and coach, if they're not your old school, then those you should be charging a fee. Because the way I think about it, if everybody in that room and go to workplaces, everybody in that room is being paid except for you. That doesn't, how does that sit to go, oh yeah, that doesn't sound right. But a lot of them are just almost so grateful for being asked to go somewhere. I'm like, girls, you got to stop feeling grateful.
Oh, it's a very,
feeling
flattered to be asked.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, actually, no, I shouldn't feel flattered. I should be paid. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like when people say, I'd love to have a chat with you one day. And I think, I bet you would. I'd love to have a chat with me sometimes too. I'm not fit it in, mate.
Oh, fantastic. And yeah, that whole, you know, how do you know your worth is quite an interesting thing, because the game is at this moment of change, isn't it? Inflection, where suddenly people are thinking, God, this is a great game. And actually the women that play it are great. And actually I do want them turning up for my corporate events, or I do want them speaking at a dinner at Allianz Stadium or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. We just need more of you. More sureness.
Also, it likes for people to put themselves out there. So I tell some of the girls the figures that I learned to go to an appearance for a few hours, and their jaw drops. And I'm saying, girls, honestly, like, you could do the same. But I put the work in elsewhere, i.e. I put myself out there. I now have a social media manager who I pay, like I invest in for myself to keep putting it out there. I go to as many events as possible. I talk to random strangers. I insert myself into conversations and I go, hi, can I join? And they go, yes. And then we have all sorts of random discussions. So as much as, like, you know, literally for a day's work, sometimes I'll be paid thousands of pounds. But I see it, I've put the work in months in advance.
I was going to say, you do your homework, don't you?
Yeah, I don't just turn up and hoping for the best, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the unpaid bit that is making up for it when I do get paid those sort of decent appearance fees. But equally, like, it depends what it is. Like, it's different rates and fees for different organisations, etc. Because I also don't want to shut myself off to people like me growing up. And, you know, I would charge a state school less than a private school. Whilst I could just say no to the state school, I would rather go in because I want to be accessible to small me's. And some people, like, I've had people say you should either charge full rate for everyone, everything, or don't do it. And I'm like, I think I can work around it in a way where, you know, I don't want to be this person who's so expensive that only rich people can afford, because then I wouldn't have been able to afford myself, and that's against everything I stand for.
Yeah.
It's working that out, but it can become a game, quite a fun game sometimes.
Yeah.
And I do still go into schools for free, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and you've done speakers for schools, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, which is a great initiative, you know, set up. For listeners who don't know what Speakers for Schools is, Robert Peston set it up for that very reason, that if you go to a private school, you know, you have the most amazing speakers and ex-students who are prime ministers and ministers and, you know, successful businessmen. But if you go to the local comprehensive, no one comes back to talk to you. So yeah. Speakers for Schools was, how do you get amazing people like Shauna Brown and others into schools to talk to children about the kind of careers that they could have that they probably didn't even think about
Yeah, and a big part for me as well is going back to, you know, speak to the mini me's, is that I tell them, like, there's a whole world out there that you could make a career out of. You have to go and do it. You don't wait for someone to come to you. You put yourself out there. You tell as many people as you want about your dream. You go and offer your services. You just make things up as you go along, but you can do it. And even accent wise and how I sound and how often I drop my T's and pronounce TH the same as I pronounce my F's. And I still remind them. And people still pick me up on that. And I think in my mind, I don't care. You're paying me £5,000 to be here. I don't care how I speak, because it's clearly going down very well. So it's just reminding, you know, people who sound like me that this voice, this accent is not to hold you back, actually. And what I found, it can be part of my unique selling point.
Oh, it's your authenticity, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll stand on a stage in front of a massive banking group and they're used to a particular type of speaker with a particular type of accent and a certain story. And I go on stage and go, blimey, hello, there's loads of you, isn't there? And I'm like, that kind of accent doesn't normally stand on that stage. Yeah. So yeah, certainly using it to my advantage, but it's getting... I say young people, but just anyone, to realise that there are many career options out there that your careers advisor at school, I didn't even have that, but they don't know about. Like, I couldn't tell you, I can't say, oh, you can be like me when you grow up, because, well, I don't know what being like me is. Like, I'm literally just making it up as I go along. But I always see, like, a big one at the moment in terms of careers is social media managers, and just generally being in social media. I think it's still so often seen as, I'm not, like, the poor cousin of comms, but it's so important. And when it's done right, it's incredible, and it gets the engagement. And you could spend tens of thousands on an out-of-home billboard that just sits at a roundabout that nobody really sees.
Or engages with,
and you get one video right on Instagram or TikTok, then you're blowing up. But, and it's not easy either. It's not just a matter of getting your phone out, taking a picture. Like, done well, it takes all of that prep. And again, like, I can get paid thousands of pounds to post a video, but it's not just the posting a video. It's the planning, it's the calls, the multiple back and forth calls. It's getting it right. It's getting it right for the brand, making sure it still represents me, the directing of, like, there's so much in it. And I think it's seriously underrated and underplayed at the moment in the comms world.
No, I think there'll be a lot of people saying hear, hear to that who are listening to this program for sure. But I'm conscious of the time and things moving on. We could talk about this for hours, but you know, you talk about mini me's and the next generation coming through. I mean, what are your hopes for the future of the women's game and for women like you in the future?
Yeah, for me, it'd be to be paid as a club player to play full-time rugby. I guess it's that simple, and I know it's very not simple, but that would be the ultimate. That you don't have to play international to be able to be a full-time rugby player.
Yeah.
And you get paid a reasonable wage where you can live and not have to live on pot noodles and bread and cheese to get through. And for me, that's the hope. And on top of that, it would be the type of people who are playing rugby. And I just want to see every type of person. And when I say every, I'm talking even wheelchair rugby as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's... rugby is one of those sports where there is a place for everyone. But also, I'm real passionate on it not all being about playing. And the emphasis is so often, like rightly so, is on playing. But actually, the game doesn't happen unless we have everyone else, from everything from team managers, coaches and physios and referees, but to your local clubs, the people who do the admin, the people who open the bar, park the cars, sell the tickets, make sure the card machines are running. Again, your local club's social media, because that's how you're going to get people down. And there's, like, when I used to coach at my local club, and there's always mums on the side watching me coach their kids. And I would say, like, what, just come and help more than anything. Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know anything about rugby. And I would say to them, do you know how to herd cats? He goes, oh, I reckon so. Can you control children? He went, yeah. I said, well, come on down. Like, you don't have to know anything about rugby. I just need people. As many different types of people, different looking people, different sounding people who are pregnant, people who are not, like, to almost to present issues that are not currently being addressed. But we can't do that because, you know, as you can't think of everything, and that's okay. But if somebody comes to the club and needs a space to breastfeed and nobody's needed that before, that will be solved. But that's probably not going to be solved until you come and, you know, present yourself. Or you might have a female who is a Muslim and she might need a space to pray. Is there a space? Is there a separate area for her to go? It's just like, and I know it's not ideal that you come in and be in the first type of person, but it's for the greater good. And if you, yes, you have, if you can't see it, can't be it. But I prefer if you can't see it, then go and be it. Go and be your first type of person in a room. And sometimes you are not welcome and you think, I'm not going back there. Fair enough, you've tried it. Mm. But be brave, put yourself out there. You never know what's going
to
happen.
Well, I was going to say, it goes back to that whole attitude of, you know, yes and try things, because you never know where it might lead and you may be very pleasantly surprised.
Exactly.
Yeah, so keep doing all those wonderful things, Shauna, because you are making a difference. And I think this program that you're going to lead from the front on will make a difference too. So I'm very excited to see the outcome of your hard work and hard preparation. Yeah. So linked to that, my final question to you is, it's a bit like Desert Island Discs, but it's not, because I'm not going to ask you about your favourite music, but I am going to ask you, what would be your favourite three-course meal and a drink to take to your desert island with you?
So I'm going to start with a pint of cider for my drink, which I'm not going to...
Any particular cider?
I do like a Thatcher's.
Oh, well, Martin Thatcher will be very happy to hear that if he's listening.
I've got a picture with him as well. He's like my hero. I saw him at a rugby camp. I was like, you Martin Thatcher. He goes, nobody ever asked for a picture. I said, I just love your cider. But I love a flat, scrumpy, like proper local in a box room temperature cider. Mm. But I'd also, the important thing is I don't eat when I drink. I don't drink with my meal. Mm. So that cider has to happen 30 minutes before.
Yeah.
And it came from a place where I just like to eat loads of food and I realize I could eat more if I don't drink, like even water, just any fluid. So that's a strange thing. Fun fact, I don't have a drink with food. But then my starter, I love seafood. So I'd go to seafood salad of mussels, prawns, cockles and scallops in like a garlicky sauce, quite like a garlic sauce, maybe like some leaves as well.
And then a bit of green.
For the nutrition, or you know, it's mainly water, but it looks good. And then for mains, I would go duck in plum sauce.
All right, okay.
Yeah, duck in plum sauce or a cherry brandy sauce. Mm. Probably both, like little pots on either side. And then just some rice. I'm quite happy with rice. And then randomly, just because they're my favourite veg, I'd have loads of sweet corn and peas on the side as well.
Yeah.
I'm not fussed whether it's corn on the cob or just on my plate.
Yeah.
But then obviously lots of butter and salt on that too. Yeah. Highly nutritious. And then for my dessert, I would be having a good old-fashioned jam, roly-poly and custard.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, bad. I could eat such
a big
portion.
So where does the jam roly-poly come from? Is that
the freezer?
the freezer. childhood, you know?
I don't know, I just love it.
I love
desserts. I love anything fruity. Like I don't like a chocolate or caramel fudge toffee, none of that. I like any sort of fruity dessert, and I know jam roly poly's pushing it on the fruity side. But like I love
it. It's more roly poly than jam.
Yeah, exactly. Like an apple crumble, apple pie, cherry crumble, all of that. But if you ask me to choose my favourite, it'd be jam, roly-poly and custard.
So on that thought, we will leave this podcast. But Shauna Brown, thank you very much for being such a great guest and wishing you all the very best with your latest endeavours, wherever they may lead you.
Who knows?
Who knows? So if you've enjoyed this discussion today, and I hope that you have, then join us next week for our next cooking guest. Goodbye from both of us from Wrexham.
Bye.